You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
Hello, this is The Christian Commute. It's, Wednesday, February 19th. This is the third and final attempt I will make to try and record the show. I just left the Sketch gas station and I'm on the Sketch phone. So what makes the Sketch gas station the Sketch gas station? You frequent listeners may wonder. Well, that's because the Sketch gas station, besides the clientele and the location, is that when you put your credit card in to buy the gas, it doesn't ask you for a zip code. It doesn't care. Just sell the gas. So if you have a stolen credit card, that's the place to get gas. Now, what makes it the Sketch phone? Well, I'm on my old broken down cell phone that has two cracked parts in the screen, and it's not at all responsive because my fancy schmancy Samsung Galaxy 9 shut down on me yesterday. It froze. It got real hot. Something's wrong with it. I don't know. I hope it's not moisture inside of it. It's supposed to be waterproof, but the thing just shut down, and I can't get it turned on. So I took the SIM card out and put it in my old phone, and I'm just driving along on this junky old phone, hoping my boss approves a new phone for me sometime soon. And until then, I'm on this thing. Now listen, this phone doesn't exactly work, but it turns on. So if I tilt it, I think my recording will keep going, but the recording's already stopped twice, so we'll see if I can get this episode of The Christian Commute out. We'll see. It's supposed to be a full episode, and it's after my two-day hiatus. I'm back from the Smoky Mountains. I'm back from my short vacation. And when you have as many kids as I do in one hotel room, you're always ready to get back to work after your vacation, no matter the length. Today's show topic, listen, new things are happening. There's all kinds of stuff I could do show topics on, but I'm going to do theological discharge because I can't keep pushing it. I'm not going to push it. Theological discharge, that's it. I'll cover the other happenings in the world later. The Bible chapter review is over 1 Peter 3, and I have a question in the inbox about resources for religions. And before I get to those things, I'm going to do the belated Beth Moore update. So I didn't have a Monday show to do a Beth Moore update. What is the Beth Moore update? I didn't get any money last week. So I'm still sitting where I was before, as the October cruise looms ever closer, giving me less and less time to finish my Beth Moore book, which I did not work at all on this weekend because I was going to say I was on vacation, but I didn't leave till Sunday afternoon. So I don't know. I got no good excuse. But that's what's going on in Beth Moore update world. Definitely will have enough money to take the cruise, because I'm about to get my bonus at work. But other than that, as far as funding it, I'm very close, thanks to you generous people. All right, let's see here. Where do I start? I'm out of practice. Don't you hate it when you get out of practice at something? You're like, what do I usually do? I'm all out of practice. I got to start the Bible chapter review. And like I said, it was take three because I'm on this broken down phone. But it looks like it's working. The battery life on this phone is terrible. I hope it lasts. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 5 through 6. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 5 through 6. We left off Friday with Peter instructing women to be submissive and adorn themselves with internal beauty, not just external beauty. And he finishes his thought here talking about women. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. So here Peter tells the women how to behave and how to live. As submissive to their husbands, adorning themselves with inner beauty, and not just external beauty. Winning their husbands if they need to be won for the Lord and not due to their own feminine wiles, we'll say. And he gives an example. He says the holy women in former times. And the specific example he gives is Sarah, who was submissive to Abraham. And we see an example of that in Genesis 18 when she refers to Abraham as Lord. Sarah obeyed Abraham. She was submissive to her husband. And writing to this predominantly Jewish audience, who better to cite than the patriarch Abraham or the patriarch's wife Sarah? Father Abraham, mother Sarah, if you will. And here's what Peter says, you have become her children. This is the children of promise. You have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. In other words, if your hope is in the Lord and you're behaving as the Lord would have you behave, rather than out of fear of how to get by in this world, you operate in a way pleasing to the world. And that's the theme we've seen throughout the last few verses, talking about how to act in a household, or how to act with the government, or how to act with the church at large, or with the world at large. You present yourself before your husband how the Lord would want you to be presented, in this submissive way. Oh no, my wife has sent me a text message. What's it going to do to this phone? For real, any signal could stop my recording because it could press the pause or stop button, just vibrating this broken down glass. The screen flashes. That's what I'm dealing with. So anyway, that's the end of the Bible chapter review. You fear the Lord, not the world. Ultimately, you fear the Lord. You don't fear your husband. Now, fear in a respectful way, right? Like, we're not like afraid. Like, oh no, it's not like a horror movie. Like, oh no, you know, we're afraid of North Korea going to bomb us. I'm not afraid of North Korea. We can beat them handily. Anyway, what I'm saying is, yes, we want to respect our husbands. But the respect we have for our husbands as women, I'm not a woman, I'm speaking to you women. Yes, we want to respect our husbands, but we respect our husbands as through the Lord. Think about what Paul says, again, not trying to eisegete what Paul said into what Peter says, but we know it matches up. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, but women, submit to your husbands as unto the Lord. You're submitted to the Lord, well, then it's easy to be submitted to your husband, whether he's right, wrong, or indifferent. All right? Fear in the Lord. All right, let's move on. This is an easy question in the inbox. It comes from Talmadge. Talmadge didn't tell me where he was from, but he noted that he was an Auburn fan. So maybe he's from that wasteland on I-85 down there in that way in the Montgomery, Auburn, Opelika area. Down there where the orange and navy blue people are. So another Auburn fan, that makes two that I know of. Poor people. Ugh, Auburn, so sad. My brother and I went to Auburn's graduation to see our friend Joe graduate with his PhD. And my brother was like, "What? This is like the little brother campus. Like they're no matter what, they'll never be Alabama." Yeah, you beat them every few years. You beat them this year. Auburn's got a good program, good team. But you'll never be number one. You'll always be second fiddle. So my second fiddle listener from parts unknown, they got to be near Auburn, because really, who would travel from afar to go to Auburn? Nobody's coming from California to go to Auburn. Like, I want to go to that Cal College. California has their own Cal colleges. So somebody from Cal College land writes in and says, "Seth, I'm enjoying the Informed Criticism series. Do you have any resources you would recommend to learn about the religions or movements you are criticizing? The answer is yes. One, first and foremost, Christian Commute or Pulpit and Pen. Like Robert Jeffress, okay? I did informed criticism of Robert Jeffress. You're not going to find a profile of Robert Jeffress in Kingdom of the Cults. And you're not going to find it in the resource I'm about to recommend to you. Because he's too mainstream. He's too orthodox. So when you have somebody who's at least website orthodox, like Robert Jeffress or Andy Stanley, it's going to take somebody like me. It's going to take a resource like Pulpit and Pen. But what about the outright Paula Whites of the world and the outright cultish, non-website orthodox heretics like Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses? I cannot recommend to you enough Watchman Fellowship Profile Notebook. And I've talked about it on here before. Listen, you can go to Watchman Fellowship. I think it's a .org. It's an outfit out of Texas. It's run by a guy named James Walker. It was founded by a guy named David Hinckley. I've met them both, and I like them. Like them both. So and they're website orthodox, so to speak. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's, you know, their evangelical ministry. A couple of my former professors were on the board of Watchmen. They sell a notebook. It's about $40 or $50. It's called the Watchman Fellowship Profile Notebook, and they say it's everything from acupuncture to Zoroastrianism. I'm not sure I pronounced that right. If there's a heretical or cultic religious movement, they have a profile on it, A to Z. Anything with religious overtones or undertones or flat out flying the flag that says this is religion, they generally have a profile on it. And yes, you can buy it, but you can also find these profiles for free if you just know what to Google. So if you wanted to Google, say, Swedenborgism, that's something, Swedenborgism. If you Google Watchman Fellowship Profile Swedenborgism, you'll find a free PDF on the internet. So you don't have to buy it unless you want to. I bought it for a class. I like to support that ministry. And if you sign up for their, you know, send them $5 and get on their mailing list, they'll email you the profiles that they do. So that is a resource I recommend. And what's good about it is it's about a 4-page profile. The idea is it's designed to be like a presidential briefing. So if you're the president and you have all these cabinet members and staff members and they need you to make an executive decision, but you don't have time to do all the research, you're going to get a 4-page briefing. That's what this is. It's a 3 to 4 page briefing. It's footnoted. It's very academically well done, and you can research the footnotes if you want to go deeper, and that's what you should get. Like, if you want to look up, say, Jehovah's Witnesses. I met Jehovah's Witnesses this weekend on vacation. They were trying to ply their trade in Smoky Mountain National Park, the visitor center. Boom. I went up and started saying, what about this? What about this? What about this? And one of the places I got my information about the Watchtower, Jehovah's Witnesses, is the Watchman Fellowship. So, Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, Islam, Roman Catholicism. I think they don't have it yet, but they're going to do one. I think they're about to do one on Bethel Church and Bill Johnson. They've got one on IHOP. So if Watchman Fellowship doesn't have it, then go to Pulpit and Pen. And if one of us doesn't have it, well, maybe it's not heresy. I don't know. Research it yourself. But yeah, Talmadge, Watchman Fellowship Profile Notebook. That is a very handy resource. It's comprehensive, and it's well cited, and it's from an orthodox perspective. And thank you for writing in, Talmadge. That was an easy one. Now let's finally get to theological discharge. So last week, or maybe it was the week before, I did a criticism of Al Mohler's theological triage philosophy. And that's where he says, all right, you've got all of these beliefs and all these doctrines, and the way to handle them is like they do triage at the hospital. You do the most imminent, the most pressing, and most threatening one first. And then the other ones that's not threatening any, you know, it's not threatening salvation, or maybe it's not threatening the order of the local church. You don't address that. You spend your time addressing the most prominent one. And I explained how I thought that's actually kind of, in a way, I didn't use this term then, it's a specious argument that you should do triage that way. I don't think it holds up to scrutiny, but it's a very popular idea. And I thought, let's take that hospital theme, triage, and now let's charge it into discharge. So to get admitted to the hospital, you go through triage. That's what's happening to you when you go to the emergency room. You're going to get admitted or not. So they're going to use triage to see which patients get seen first, and then they're going to determine, do you need to be admitted to the hospital because you're still sick or you need further treatment, or can you be discharged from medical care and go home? So if anybody's ever been to the hospital before, you know you can't go home, you can't leave until the doctor discharges you. And sometimes they figure out, maybe it's 4 p.m. and they figure out that you're okay, but the doctor's already going home and he's not going to be there until tomorrow. Well, you're going to spend an extra night in the hospital because the doctor is not there to discharge you. The official medical professional, the treating physician, has to say, I discharged this person. It's not safe for them to go home until he says so. That's discharge. So we've talked about theological triage. You're identifying the heresies, decide which ones do we address. But now let's talk about discharge. And if you had people in a hospital and they had these theological beliefs, who would you let go? You're basically saying, you're okay, I'm letting you go, you don't need further treatment. So we're assuming that you've been admitted. And I thought, how can we apply this? Let's apply this to your podcast lineup. So look at all your podcasts that you're doing and say, who would you discharge? And I'm not saying it like, who would you eliminate from your podcast lineup because they have errant beliefs. That's not how I mean it. Like, oh, William Lane Craig's progressive creationism, discharge. Because progressive creationism is wrong. Quote me on this if you want. I'm on record as saying William Lane Craig, I think, is the greatest living Christian apologist. Progressive creationism is God of the gaps. It just is. If somebody told him that, he'd probably pick it apart. But in my opinion, progressive creationism is akin to God of the gaps. So I'm not saying go through your podcast feed of everybody you're listening to, find something wrong with him and say, I'm taking him out of my feed, discharge. That's not the discharge I'm talking about. I'm saying, at what point would you say, this person has cleared all the doctrinal checks, they're healthy, and they can be released into the general population because they're not going to infect anyone else or get sicker themselves. If somebody's on a cruise ship and they have coronavirus, you're not going to let them off that cruise ship. They're quarantined, all right, because they could infect somebody else. To use a timely example. So let's think of my podcast feed. Well, my podcast, I'm right about everything. So let's discharge me. I'm okay. All right. So who else is on my podcast feed? Reformed Theological Seminary iTunes. Like iTunes U for Reformed Theological Seminary. Well, they are paedo-baptists. All right. I would never discharge them from the theological hospital until they were corrected on their paedo-baptism. Will I keep them in my podcast lineup? Yes, because I go in knowing that they're wrong on paedo-baptism, but knowing that they're also correct on a lot of other things, and it's a good resource from which to learn academically. Right? Theological discharge. Sorry, you're still sick. You are you're a paedo-baptist. Are you going to die to go to hell? No, of course not. But we're not doing Al Mohler triage. We're doing discharge. William Lane Craig's in my podcast feed. All right, William Lane Craig, I talked about progressive creationism. What else? Molinism. I might be okay with Molinism as a theory, but I would not ever advocate a Molinistic hermeneutic. That seems like William Lane Craig's hermeneutic is Molinistic. So, I mean, I don't want to, you know, take the rest of the podcast and beat up on William Lane Craig, because, you know, why fight your own guys? He's a Baptist and he's a good apologist. Yeah, but that's a problem he's got. I think progressive creationism, it's not just a bad apologetic, in my opinion. I mean, ultimately, I don't think it lines up with Scripture. Some people think it does. I don't. Now, who else can we do? Who else is on my old podcast feed? Wayne Barber, the Wayne Barber Sermon Series. Southern Baptist. Good doctrines. I'm going to let him stay. All right, maybe some of you are listening to the Matt Chandler podcast. Oh, he preaches pretty good. He's pretty orthodox. Oh, yeah, but what about his ecclesiology? What about that multi-campus stuff? What about applying theology to his idea of diversity in elder leadership? Is that biblical? Do we discharge him or not? So as an exercise for you guys, I want you to go through the sources that you're putting in your head. And if you listen to me, you probably listen also to Polemics Report, probably some other podcasts on Bible Thumping Wingnut, the Bible Thumping Wingnut Network. Do you know what podcasts I listen to on Bible Thumping Wingnut Network? This one and Polemics Report. I don't think I've ever listened to any of the other ones, except sometimes I listen to Tim Hurd's Bible Thumping Wingnut podcast itself. Who else? What else? A lot of you probably listen to Wretched Radio. Like, would you let Todd Friel out of theological discharge? I probably would. I would probably discharge him back into the general public. But the idea here is to think about, what am I listening to and what is possibly wrong that I'm putting in my head, and am I cognizant of the disagreements, of the error? Like, I'm very cognizant of the Presbyterian error in Reformed Theological Seminary. But quite frankly, if you listen to their Old Testament class on the books of the law, I think, what's the guy's name who does that? Is it Belzer or Beltzer or something? Kara. Is it Kara? I think his name is Kara. That's a good class. I mean, it would be very similar to what I got at the Baptist Seminary. So, theological triage. You think about, who do I want to let into the hospital and give quote-unquote treatment to? And not that we're doctors, you know, and we know everything. Doctors don't know everything. God does. Think about this. God knows everything and he can heal anybody at will. Doctors know a lot of things and they can't fix everybody. So, I mean, hey, you know a lot of things, but you can't fix everybody, right? Call yourself a theological doctor. You don't have to have a PhD. Just IFB, just get your Bible. All right? So I am not advocating the IFB, although I sound more and more like one. Let's see. Yeah, discharge. Discharge is, you're assuming that there's a problem, and not until you're satisfied that the problem is fixed do you let it out. So you can do this at your local church. Would you theologically discharge your local church? We don't have any false teachings here. We don't have any problems. There's not that one thing. By the way, your church has problems. I'm talking about theological problems. I got a problem. I'm behind somebody at a green light. Why aren't you going? What are you doing? I can't see the green light, but everybody else is going. It's very aggravating. I don't need to be stopped at this red light. I'm running out of things to talk about. All right, are we going now? So, yeah, you're always going to have problems at your local church. You're not in a constant... All right, so the recording died, and I'm going to have to do some splicing, sorry. So, parachurch. God did not institute the parachurch organizations. And otherwise, like Campus Crusade, no matter what their statement of faith is, isn't Jesus' organization. The church is. It literally is. Jesus is the shepherd of the church. You're his sheep, all right? So, once you've done theological discharge on yourself and your local church, you're okay biblically. But we all know we're getting resources from outside your local church, right? So if you think of me, I am a member of the local church Fellowship Baptist Church of Sydney, Montana. It is not a big church, a couple hundred people, right? Almost all of my listeners are outside that organization. So if I'm coming to you, I'm coming to you from outside of your local church. Now, do I have local church membership that endorses me, and does that mean something? Yes, it does, because I've got an Orthodox church behind me. But you need to do theological discharge on me, because now I'm coming into your head. Now I'm your family's listening to me. What about me? If you're thinking from an Al Mohler theological triage perspective, you'd never touch me. Because, oh, well, like, there's a whole lot more problems in the world than what Seth Dunn believes. He's super Orthodox. But, you know, okay. Let's do first, second, third tier. You know I don't believe in those tiers. You know, you wouldn't do that to me in theological triage. Because you'd get to some disagreement with me, and it'd be fourth tier. It'd be about something like the timing of the rapture or something. Or if there was a rapture. That's what it'd be. So go down your resources, the books you read, the podcasts you listen to, and listen to this. What comes into your local church, your Lifeway studies or whatever else, and do the theological discharge on it. Not the triage, the discharge. And you think, what would I let out into the population? And I think if you do that, listen, it's going to take more time than theological triage. It's going to be more exclusive than theological triage. It's going to eliminate a bunch of stuff. But remember, you're not money man Al Mohler trying to make a living on the speaking and writing circuit. You're Joe Pewsitter. All right? And it ain't about making a living for you. It's about holiness and discipleship. And surely you can afford to do the time that theological discharge takes. And by the way, this is going to sharpen you. Theological triage is not going to sharpen you. When you get to somebody in theological triage, like, you're not going to find Arians. How many Arians outside of, say, Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons do you know? And you think, these academics who walk around saying, well, they affirm the Apostles' Creed. Go to every church in this town. Which one wouldn't? Even the liberal churches will say they affirm the Apostles' Creed. And then you get down to something like inerrancy or the hermeneutic method, and you'll see, well, they really don't. You know, resurrection is something different to them. And the thing about, you affirm the Apostles' Creed, good for you. Did you brush your teeth this morning too? I mean, did you put your turn signal on when you turned? I mean, what is that saying? That's so simple. It's so basic, if you will. The people who err or oppose or disagree with what the Apostles' Creed said are very obvious heretics. It's like they're the first heretics. So they had to make the Apostles' Creed from, you know, 1800 years ago or whenever that thing was first published. It's old, man. Like, we totally agree with the Council of Nicaea. Well, good, you're not an Arian. What about the next 1,400 years of church history, please? 1,700 years, however long. I'm not good with dates. It's 325 or 425. I never can remember when the Council of Nicaea was, if it was 3 or 4. I think it was 325. Very early. But when you get into theological discharge, now you have to understand, like, why do I insist on male headship in the church and complementarianism? What does it mean to be complementarian? Now you're going further than Jesus is God. You're applying these things against all the other people who say Jesus is God. Of course Jesus is God. Why do I believe this way about ecclesiology and where the authority in the church is? Should we have this multi-campus church? Why do I believe this way about baptism? Why is this a church ordinance? And why, you know, why will I not baptize a baby or a, you know, or sprinkle a two-year-old? Why do I insist on immersing believers? And now you start to explain, listen, your distinctives. What we sometimes call Baptist distinctives. What makes us different than all the other churches out there in the world, in the visible church. Theological discharge will sharpen you. And it will make you somebody who can sharpen others and explain and disciple and teach others. It's about meat, not milk. So practice theological discharge. And Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. I think my phone's going to actually get through this here. I hope it hooks up to my computer. This thing, man, it's seen better days. hopefully my boss says, yeah, let's get Seth a new phone. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. As always, God bless. And as always, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.